This is the Friday, July 14th, 2017 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Tom Fitzenmaier. Tom, welcome back.
Thanks, Mike.
Now, we did not get a chance to discuss energy much on the program. We did not talk about crude oil, which has been bouncing back and forth, but it looks like that $50 mark is kind of the top end.
U.S. production continues to grow. The rig counts continue to go up. I think the new administration is committed to domestic production. They're opening up additional ground for oil exploration. And I suspect, and kind of reading between the lines, this OPEC, non-OPEC oil alliance is starting to sort of crumble a little bit. They see Syria or Libya and Nigeria, who aren't members of that little club, continuing to ramp up their production. All these countries are highly dependent on their oil sales for their economy, and I don't think they're going to keep the spigot turned down for too much longer. So you're getting a nice rally here. Maybe you can get $50. I think you'll have trouble getting above it. If you do, you don't sustain it. I think you're more likely to go sub 42 than you are above 50.
Wow. So at this point, as a speculative play, are you interested in just making some sales outright on crude oil futures?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you get up against that $50 level, and I'd be way more inclined to be selling it than wanting to own it.
All right. Now, we've got a couple of questions here from our followers on Facebook and on Twitter, and we're going to kick it off with our first one from Jared in Matton, Illinois. He's asking, historically, what months would you want to avoid making sales in if you're going to deliver right off the combine in September and October?
Well, I think he sort of answered his own question. I think those are the 2 months you have to avoid. I mean, that's the reason why we've built a gazillion bins around the world, around the country, because everybody's trying to avoid that time. You've got a terrible basis. You've got generally prices themselves, net prices, futures prices are low. I think those are the 2 months you want to avoid. If you have to sell something in that time, you better start looking at some sort of a forward contract or something that gets a chunk of that sold before that terrible time rolls around. But those are the 2 months, maybe on into November a little bit, until the crop gets locked up and locked away. Then you can see basis improvement. A lot of times we'll see futures price improvement. But boy, that's the time to avoid. And the bin also, you know, you get cheaper drying. It works better when you don't have to wait in line to unload and all that. So, I mean, there's other reasons for having bins, but that's one of the big ones.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't sell when everybody's moving to make sales.
Correct.
Hit them where they ain't is what Dad used to say. We've got our next question from Matt in Brandon, South Dakota. He's asking, how much lower will new crop corn and beans trade? And then what's it going to take to get them turned around and moving back to the upside?
Well, you know, there's one of the things that we seem to forget as U.S. producers is how much production there was in South America last summer. I mean, in addition to that, we don't realize how much we benefited from their poor crop the year before. I don't know if we go ahead here and have temperatures that are in the low 90s to, you know, high 80s, we get an occasional. I mean, that's the thing about this rain and moisture is everybody says, well, it's not rain. Well, it kind of is. If you watch the map, you know, there's a blob here and a blob there, and it's my contention that the amount of rain we get isn't as important as the distribution of that rain across the summer. Mm-hmm. And you showed some pretty horrific pictures earlier in the show on up in South Dakota, and there are areas that are suffering, no doubt about it. But like I said in the show, we added 1 million acres that we didn't think we had. We had stocks up a couple hundred million or so. So we've got a little more cushion than we thought we had. To answer his question, I think if everything goes right, you can see Dease corn trade as low as 330 to 340. I think you could see November beans. They got down to $9 just a couple weeks ago. I think you could see that area retested, assuming you have decent weather through August.
Okay. All right. Our next question is from Rodney up in Edgar, Wisconsin. And he asked this a little earlier in the week, so we did kind of see it turn around. But he's asking, is there hope that the cattle markets will turn higher? Will they continue to run higher throughout the summer? Or are we in a downward trend?
I don't think we're in a downward trend. I think that, like I said, this midweek, we had that limit day up. We got the structure of the cattle market is good with the futures at a discount to the cash market. Feedlots are staying relatively current. I don't see us shooting out through the top, although I suppose we could under the right circumstances. But I guess I don't see any reason to get real down in the dumps on the cattle market right now.
All the news that's come out is either neutral or bullish, it seems like. In livestock or in cattle anyway.
Correct.
And now that was one of the things I wanted to pick your brain a little bit. You were talking about the hog market when we wrapped up the program and how that market has gone from almost appeared to be an excess of euphoria. We're up north of $90 on the front month to now we're sub 80. We're looking at, as you mentioned, some chart points that could be fairly catastrophic.
Yeah.
Could you expand on that a little bit? What happens if we break down below there?
Well, I guess it's under 62.50 on that December contract. I think you take it at least down into the mid 50s.
Okay.
I mean, you drive around northern and northwest Iowa, you got to look before you cross the highway or you'll get run over by a cement truck. I mean,
they're not building roads.
No, and they're not building roads.
No, they're building barns.
They're building barns. So at some point, I'm just a little fearful of market saturation. Now, like I said, exports have been quite good, and that's probably going to continue. Weaker dollar helps. But I just think we're going to get a little overloaded on the pork side here.
Okay. So you're looking at making some sales, not just in these nearby. You're willing to make some sales pretty far out through the end of 2017?
Yeah, I'm more concerned about fourth quarter than I am in the, third quarter, I guess.
Okay. All right. Are you, with lean hogs, does it make any sense to look out 2018 for some sales already?
Yeah, the prices aren't all that great. I can't imagine anybody's going to step in. I mean, okay. I'm just not excited about going out that far. It seems like every time I do that, some crazy factor comes up that burns me. So I'm a little reluctant to do
all
that,
right.
I guess.
Once bit, twice shy.
Correct.
Okay. Now, we've got a question from our buddy Phil in Ontario, Canada. He's on Twitter at Agridome. And just like to get your perspective on his thoughts. He says, it seems to me the fundamentals of grain are more bearish in 2017 than they were in 2016. What do you think? Is that an accurate setup?
Well, I think what I said a little earlier about the South American crop, that if you look at the world situation with the disaster they had in Brazil and Argentina last year, we were the beneficiaries of that. Well, they had a great crop through this winter. That's why we have no export sales now through October. And we're having maybe not a great crop, but probably a pretty darn good one. So, yeah, I think he's absolutely right. The world's awash in grains much more than they were.
Now, with South America, we had seen farmers fairly reluctant to make sales, at least of their soybeans. They've been sticking them in bins, they've been sticking them in bags down there, given all the political turmoil. Is that going to continue? Could that be a saving grace? Or
no,
eventually they'll need money.
At some point, they're going to need money. They're going to have to move product. So, I mean, that. A lot of times when you read the reports in the morning, you say, well, there's big farmer selling in the U.S. and South America. So, I mean, their farmers aren't reacting all that much differently than the U.S. farmers are. When they see a rally, they're taking advantage of it, too.
All right. Now, before we let you go, Tom, we are still taking questions from ag students across the country. We encourage all of you, if you're a student, get out that phone, send us a camera. We are talking to an Iowa State student today, and you can learn more about this project if you listen to the M2M podcast number 143. So, Tom, here is our latest question.
How feasible do you think it'll be for young generations to start farming with little equipment and little land?
Hardly feasible at all. I mean, if you don't have a family member that you can piggyback on, historically, getting started in farming, almost always, the only way to do that was substitute labor, capital for labor. And it used to be you could find a place, have a few hogs, work hard feeding hogs and sort of work that up. But with this mega hog situation, nobody wants to buy your 50 hogs at, mm-hmm. that are you're growing in the barn behind the house. I mean, it's just very difficult. Now, there's a few people doing it with cow-calf operations, if you can afford to buy a few cows and sort of grow the herd that way. Otherwise, I just think buying land's prohibitive. You have to be pretty well-heeled to be able to do that. And even some of the well-heeled people aren't all that excited about doing it. So it's tough.
I have also, since you're talking about hogs, I have heard of young folks who are able to purchase some piece of land, go into contract feeding, up a hog barn, try to build it out that way, spend your labor cleaning the barn and power washing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You got to have something where you're going to be required to work pretty hard.
Right, right. It's not an easy way to get started. Well, Tom Fitzmyer, as always, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks, Mike.
Join us again next week when Elaine Cubb will sit across from me at the Market to Market table, and we'll look at how a plan set in motion decades ago is paying it forward to a new group of farmers. Until then, thanks for watching or listening. I'm Mike Pearson. Have a great week.